was going to be like a one-stop race or maybe a two-stop race, and it ended up being four or five-stop race. It was nuts. Just slammed into the wall and went across the track and slammed into the other wall, and his car was in bits.
He just literally, by inches, missed, as he said himself, T-boning Bordoletto. It was so impressive. Very scary, very intense. I don't understand what happened with Ferrari today.
Felt like Piastri had 17 pit stops and slow ones. Can we talk about the pit stops? What was going on in Zandvoort? So many teams
had
pit stops that were like 3.8 seconds, and it wasn't until Piastri's last pit stop that it was under 3 seconds. Like, this is McLaren. They normally do 2.2 seconds. I will say Ferrari did a pretty good double stack pit stop. That was like bang, bang.
I honestly think McLaren are deluded.
There's no explanation for it. Like, if it can't be Ferrari, if it can't be Oscar, let it be an Italian. And yeah. I really like Kimi Antonelli. I want my niece to marry him. I just want him in the family.
Are you ready?
And it's lights out and away we go.
Let's do it. Hello, hello, and welcome back to Away We Go podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel and lifestyle surrounding the sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and today I'm in Margaret River, and it's literally like 15 minutes after Zandvoort, after the race is finished. And I'm joined by the ever lovely Kira Gillen from Formula Live Pulse, who is in Berlin. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me back. What a race.
Yes, what a race. Yes, it's late in Australia. The race has just finished, and like, I'm exhausted, and it's not from the time, it's from the race. It was so hectic. There was just so much. We've got so much to talk about. Where do we start? Kira, take it away.
Oh my God, where do we start? Okay, let's start with Lando just quickly, because we're always saying mean things about Lando. So let's get the niceties out of the way. Congratulations, Lando. You did actually an impressive race. It was impressive because there was a point where I didn't think he was going to win, and he managed to hold on and managed to do it. And yeah, so it really was an impressive drive. And that's two races in a row that he's won. So I'm like, ooh, okay, he's starting to catch up. But Lando really was impressive. So I'll give him that.
Yeah, congratulations to Lando. He won the race, and he won it convincingly in the end. I think he had one less pit stop than a lot of the other drivers.
Good question. Okay, yeah, I'm going to look into that and see actually if he did. Yeah, yeah, there was a lot of pit stops.
Oh my God, like they were saying it was going to be like a one-stop race or maybe a two-stop race, and it ended up being four or five-stop race. It was nuts. Like, I mean, there's a virtual safety car, there was a restart. Oh, Max Verstappen crashed out on the first lap. A big shunt, a big hit where he hit a wet part of the track and just slammed into the wall and went across the track and slammed into the other wall, and his car was in bits. It's lucky he wasn't hurt, actually. It was a big hit. And then Gabriel Bortoletto right behind him has spun around and did the 360. Massive plume of a thick white wall of smoke, and his teammate Nico Hülkenberg, oh my God, there were centimetres between them. Like, how Nico avoided that, I can't even.
I know. Like, the instincts, the reflexes of Hülkenberg and that were just crazy. They were so impressive.
Wild.
Because it was also, as you said, like a plume of smoke. Like, he couldn't even see, and he was going right, and then he just switch back to left. Whether he had a sixth sense, whether he knew, I don't know. But he just literally, by inches, missed, as he said himself, T-boning Bordoletto. It was so impressive. Very scary, very intense. And right, it's huge.
Massive.
Really huge.
I'm glad he was okay, but what a shame. Like, you know, look, I'm not a massive Max lover, but my heart broke for him in front of his home crowd at the very last race in Zandvoort, you know, on the first lap, you know, well, first real lap. I felt really bad for Max.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, of course, right? It's the very last race in Zandvoort. So it was very disappointing for him.
Yeah, and one thing I learned to speaking about the last race at Zandvoort was that this race is not backed by the government. So it's not, so for the race to be viable, they need to sell out completely all 3 days of the race weekend, which at the moment is happening for a lot of races around the world. But to be locked into a long-term contract with Formula One or Liberty Media, who knows what the future's going to hold? And it was just too, it was just too much of a risk, the reports that I read. So it was Zandvoort that backed out and said, we don't want to renew. Yeah. So, I mean, if the Dutch government like was underwriting the race or backing the race, which a lot of governments do at Formula One races around the world, maybe it would still be on the calendar. They looked at alternating years and whatnot, but nothing worked out. So
that's really interesting. I also wonder, though, like if Max hadn't signed till 2030, you know, because obviously everyone says, oh, Max is going to leave, et cetera, but he is one of the big draws for the Dutch people in Zandvoort, you know, and maybe there was a part of them thinking, God, if he was to leave, we could be in trouble because maybe we can't sell the site, as you say, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and with that uncertainty, I'm sure that played a part in their decision-making. It would have to. So I've got the pit stops up on
I just pulled it up as well. Yeah. Yeah, I have it here as well.
On the Formula Live Pulse app, if you go, you need to go to more and tire strategy, and that shows the number of pit stops, right, that each driver had. Everyone had one because of the restart, because of Max going off. So Lando had another two pit stops. Antonelli had another three pit stops. Russell had another two pit stops. So that's your top three of the race. Hamilton had another two pit stops. Leclerc, who was in fifth, had another three pit stops. Oh, Piastri, felt like Piastri had 17 pit stops. And slow ones, oh my God, can we talk about the pit stops? Can we talk about the pit stops? What was going on in Zandvoort? So many teams had pit stops that were like 3.8 seconds. And it wasn't until Piastri's last pit stop that it was under 3 seconds. Like, this is McLaren. They normally do 2.2 seconds.
Piastri had, basically like five different tires, but it felt like he had 20 pit stops. Yeah. It's just crazy.
Yeah, he was on hards, and then they pitted him and put him on hards again when he'd only been on hards for like 13 laps or something. I don't understand the McLaren strategy.
I wanted to scream at the TV. Oh, I just didn't understand it.
I did scream at the TV.
Yeah, good. Okay, so they put Piastri on hards. Okay, and the commentators were laughing because they said that Charles over the radio said with a chuckle in his voice, is Piastri on hards? Like, what the hell is this guy doing? So I was talking to Simone and I was like, well, why are they doing that? Are they trying to get data for Norris or whatever, you know? And then he was like, no, I bet you they're putting him on hards so he'll go longer and then he'll be able to kind of, you know, slow everybody up and then help Norris come back and get the win. And I was like, oh my God, how are they always sacrificing Piastri's race for Norris? Like, it's just driving me bonkers. And then out of nowhere, on lap 16, something like that, they pit him. And I was like, oh yeah, to undercut Russell because Russell had pitted. And I'm like, okay, fine if that's what you're doing, but at least get it bloody well right. And then they didn't. It was a 3.8 second stop and he lost it. He went from being third, where he was on the podium. I know it was early in the race and a lot happened, but then it was like he was driving a tractor. Like, what happened to his car?
It really was. But I mean, when he was in third, he was looking dangerous. Didn't you see that overtake that Piastri did on, was it George Russell?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, on the restart. Yeah.
Even the commentators on Sky Sports were saying, oh my God, that was just insane. Like, that's not a normal overtaking place. Like, Piastri just committed and came in and he was fearless. It was brilliant to see. And he was looking really dangerous, and as in looking like he was going to get a great result.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The good type of dangerous.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then the team with the strategy and the pit stops. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I feel like Piastri is driving a tractor. I feel like he is driving a tractor in comparison to Norris. I don't understand it. They put him on softs. You're thinking, okay, great, he's on softs. He's going to fly through the thing. He's like 16 seconds, 15 seconds, and 16 seconds, and it's going slower. And then at one point, when Norris and Antonelli are fighting with Hamilton. Before they started fighting with Hamilton, they say to Piastri, it looks like Hamilton's going to go all the way to the end here, so there could be a chance for you. What are you on about? There's three cars in between them and Hamilton. I honestly think McLaren are deluded.
There's no explanation for it. I get so tired of just constantly being disappointed with McLaren. I've said it 100 times. I just feel like that Oscar's a sacrificial lamb every single time. And, okay, now he's going to be for the remaining, what have we got, 11 races or whatever we've got left in the season, because Norris has won back-to-back races and Piastri just hasn't been able to deliver the results because of the tractor that he's in. I don't know what is wrong with his car. He's clearly able to drive it. I mean, that overtake doesn't happen if you can't handle the car. But then what happens? Like, did they switch something off in the garage? I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, the thing is that we were also talking a little bit rationally as well. It doesn't make any sense why they would sabotage Piastri, but I just don't understand it. If you look at all the other drivers on the top teams, they're all within each other. Hamilton and Charles are literally swapping races where they're, you know, they're both besting each other. They finished literally fourth and fifth today. Besides from Russell's issues that he's had, him and Antonelli are like literally neck and neck. And then you've got, Verstappen and Hadjar. And Hadjar's not doing too badly, but, you know, he's there, he's competing with him. Obviously, Verstappen is the GOAT, and, you know, it'd be very hard to be completely close to him. And then you've got Norris and Piastri. And there's just this gulf, and I don't want, and people come for me in the comments because maybe I need somebody to slap some sense into me, but I don't want to believe that Piastri is not good enough, that he's lost it, because I don't understand it. The guy was fighting for a championship last year. Like, he's not a novice. He's not an inexperienced driver, and he's not a one-hit wonder.
No.
His first year in Formula One, he won a sprint race. Like, I'm sorry, but he's got talent. So what is going on?
I don't know what is going on. You see flashes of brilliance, like that overtake that he did on George Ross early in the race and after the restart. It's almost making the commentary team speechless. It's that bold. Yet things just slip away. Things just fall away. You did mention just then Hadjar, who didn't race at Zandvoort. He had a wrist injury. He heard it when he was doing his boxing training. Apparently he wasn't in the race, so they promoted Liam Lawson from Racing Bulls up to Red Bull, and then they brought in Yuki Tsunoda. So Yuki Tsunoda was back on the grid, which is fantastic to see. So Yuki Tsunoda in the Racing Bulls, and I've got to pay credit to Liam Lawson. So Oscar finished in sixth place. We ran through the top five. Oscar finished in sixth place. Liam Lawson finished in seventh. Like, driving that car for this new era of car for the very first time. And after the horror that he had at Red Bull, you know, last year, two races and then got the boot, demoted to Racing Bulls. That was just awful to see. So happy that he did well. Nico Hülkenberg, eighth in the Audi. Fantastic result. And God, the reflexes on there. Full respect. The guy's like 39. Amazing. He did amazing. And Fernando Alonso finished ninth. Oh, the old boys. Let's give him a round of applause. Fantastic to see Aston Martin in the points. Apparently they bought a big upgrade, which paid dividends for Fernando. And then we had Pierre Gasly in 10th in the Alpine. Again, great result. Alpine is just consistently up there, aren't they, in the top 10 lately. And then Yuki Tsunoda finished 11th. First time driving a Formula One car in... well, this era of Formula One car, the new era, and
exactly.
He hasn't driven a car since, early December last year. So fantastic for him to finish in 11th, just out of the points. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
But the race, oh, man, there's more to unpack. So we had a few incidents, as Charles Leclerc said, incidents. Yeah. Did you see the Williams come together at the end?
My God, like, what a waste. Like, I don't understand.
We weren't shown the lead up to it. We just saw on the broadcast I was watching, we just saw them come together. They touched Albon went off and ended his race, and Carlos continued on and ended up finishing in 16th position, and he was last to finish.
And he also got a 10-second penalty.
Yeah, for causing a collision, which I wish we'd had a scene what actually happened there. And why are those two coming together and racing aggressively? I thought they were kind of mates. They live in the same apartment building, like across the corridor from each other. They've both re-signed with Williams. Is Alex upset he's only got a one-year deal and Carlos has got a multi-year deal? Is Carlos on heaps more money? I don't know.
Look, I am no expert, but it looked to me like Carlos lost grip and slid into Alex. Like, it looked like it definitely was Carlos's fault. Without a doubt, it was Carlos's fault. But it just looked like it was one of those things where they were, I don't know, and maybe other people would say, no, Carlos was being aggressive and he, you know, but he just looked like he just couldn't control the car and then just went into him. But he was still holding up the rest of the pack. He is without a doubt driving a tractor, him and Albon. And I think Carlos is probably very frustrated, and that really shows when he's on track then, because he makes these stupid mistakes and is aggressive and hits. Do we know, is it official? Did he get this 30 million euro deal, or is that just rumor? Because I'm fascinated to know. I don't know if Carlos really had anywhere else to go, but I could understand why Williams would try and secure him even more. But it's a huge jump from 12 or 13 million to 30 million.
Well, if that's a two-year deal, that's only 12 million to 15 million, I suppose. If you're talking about a multi-year deal, they don't tell us how long the contracts are with drivers anymore. They used to say a two-year deal or a four-year deal. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Like, we don't know how long McLaren have got Lando and Oscar for. It's a multi-year deal. We know how long Red Bull have got Max for. They've got Max till 2030, which is brilliant. I've got to apologise to everyone out there that listened last week, because we published the rumour episode with all the rumours, and then the day after, well, the day of, I think, it went live. Everything kind of came out, and Max got announced with his new deal, and Carlos announced he was staying with Williams, and yeah, so it was all of our breaking down the conjecture and speculation and debating all of that was pretty redundant pretty quickly. But you know, that's Formula One. What can you do?
Well, this is it exactly, and we could not have predicted it. If we just want to really look really quickly at the contracts, just while we're talking about it, not everybody is signed, because I only realized that afterwards. I realized there's a lot of drivers that are not confirmed. So the ones that are not confirmed are both Mercedes boys. They still haven't signed contracts yet. Hajar still hasn't signed a contract yet. Both of the Racing Bulls, both of the Aston Martins, both of the Haas, and both of the Audi, and Colapinto. So the half the grid still has to confirm their contracts for next year. Yeah. I would be shocked if Red Bull wasn't. I'd be shocked if Antonelli wasn't and George wasn't. I'd be shocked if, as we said, Barrichello wasn't staying with Audi. But it's just interesting to see kind of like, you know, I kind of thought everybody was all locked and loaded for 2027, but apparently not.
Speaking of Kimi Antonelli, I mean, I thought Kimi drove a brilliant race. Like, he qualified in third. He had a great start, especially with the restart as well. Like, he took the lead off Lando, was yelling at the TV. It was so exciting. Yeah. But that's he ended up finishing in second place, which is great. Great for him, but he just couldn't catch Lando. And then Mercedes gave team orders and made George and Kimi swap, because George was in second place. And then I was confused about that, because it was 11 seconds between Lando Norris and George Russell. He finished 11.53 seconds behind Lando Norris, so he didn't catch him. Are they protecting Kimi's title fight? I don't know why they did that.
I was shocked as well. I thought they would let them battle it out, and I think Kimi would have taken Russell no problem, though Hamilton struggled, but I do think Kimi would have taken him. I mean, I heard Russell going, is he going for the win? Like, is he, you know, what's happening here? Yeah, I'm quite surprised. I'm actually really quite surprised. I still think it's achievable for Russell. Were they worried about Hamilton? That Hamilton was going to come and then they might lose both of them?
When that happened, when they made the team order to swap, George said, we've just lost a double podium here, mate. He said to his race engineer, as in, Lewis is going to pass me. So George had the older tyres at that point. and Kimi had fresher tyres. And maybe they did that to not waste their tyres battling it out. I don't know. But the difference in the driver standings, so Kimi still leads the driver standings, of course. So he's on 242 points and George Russell is second on 183 points. So that's 59 points difference. Maths. Lewis is on 183 points as well. And then Lando is fourth on 159 points.
Lando is 83 points behind Kimi.
I know, it's a tough ask.
It's a tough ask.
11 races to go. Yeah. Lando sounds like, you know, what he said on the team radio after winning the race, he sounds like he's thinking that there could be a chance at another title. I mean, the upgrades that McLaren bought this weekend were, I mean, the car was looking impressive. Well, his car was looking impressive. Oscar's was looking impressive to start with, like we said.
Lando has won several of the races that are to come in the sense of, like, he's experienced with them. He knows how to win them. He's won the Dutch Grand Prix. I actually had him on my podium as to win it because I had a feeling about him. I put Kimi as the way I did it. I put Kimi as the ultimate winner, but then I had Lando on my podium. I can't even say the words. It would upset me very much if Lando came back to win this title. It really was.
I would not be enjoying that either. No, definitely not. We need an Italian. We need Kimi to win or a Ferrari to win.
We need Kimi to win.
Or Lewis. I think Lewis is a long shot. But, I mean, as much of a long shot as George Russell is, the Ferrari car is not looking terrible.
I just don't understand Ferrari.
No one does.
I don't understand what happened with Ferrari today. Then Charles nearly takes out the back of Hamilton at the end. And I'm like, what are you doing, Charles? For one place. What are you doing? And then they're shouting at each other because Lewis is like, I'm faster, but he's on like 20-year-old tyres. And so then they end up pitting Leclerc. Leclerc doesn't want to pit. And I don't think he understands that he's losing time. And so then they eventually pit him. And then Lewis is on the radio going, well, thanks for wasting time here. I mean, it's very entertaining for us to hear this back and forth and the complaining. But it's just, as a Ferrari fan, it is very hard to watch. It's very hard to watch.
Yeah, it's painful.
It came down to strategy and pit stops. And, you know, like, okay, Hamilton started fifth and ended fourth. Okay, so he gained place, you know. I'm just curious about the end where he was on the hards. He was on 22-year-old laps or tires. And then the two boys came. They definitely were going to take him. He was like, are you, what did he call? He said something like, are you guinea pigging me? Am I guinea pigging? Because like, he was being, you know, destroyed. And then the VSC comes and they're like, okay, we pit you. But then George doesn't pit. And George had the same length of tyres, same age tyres that Hamilton then had. And George still keeps third. And Hamilton on fresher tyres couldn't get past him.
The tyres just didn't seem to last very well at Zandvoort on the track. I mean, the track temperature was 35 degrees or something. So it wasn't as hot as what it's been in like plenty of other races.
Yeah, but did you notice though, and again, like this, like, tell us in the comments with the more technical people among you, but like, did you notice though that when Kimi changed his tires, like, okay, he was struggling on those hards and then the VSC came perfect, he changed his tires and he got his speed back up. When Norris changed his tires earlier, he got his speed back up. Well, Norris was flying actually really throughout the whole race, but like when Ferrari changed their tires or when Piastri changed his tires, it made no difference. They didn't seem to have any kind of like gain or on it.
Advantage.
Yeah, any advantage. It never felt like Ferrari were driving with fresh tyres. At one point, at the very end, when they changed both Hamilton's tyres and Leclerc's tyres, Hamilton went on 7-lap-old tyres, softs, and Leclerc went on fresh softs. Why they kept that till the end, I do not know, but anyway. And then Leclerc didn't really have the pace until that very last lap. So it's like it took them ages for those tyres to either, not even just warm them up, but just to kick them in, you know what I mean? And then they come to life. And I don't know, it must be the car as well, right? Because
yeah, it's frustrating. Yes, entertaining for us listening to the team radio because Hamilton doesn't really hold back. And I love that guinea pig comment. Like, are you bringing me in or what? I mean, I will say Ferrari did a pretty good double stack pit stop. That looked pretty good. And that was like bang, bang, both of them, one after the other. It's well known the conditions change at Sandford really, really quickly. It started raining before the formation lap. So the track was wet and there was a debate, you know, inters or slicks. And then the track dried really quickly. They did an extra formation lap because Ollie Bearman, his car just stopped. His engine just stopped. It's, yeah. So Ollie Bearman was a DNF. Maths we've talked about, DNF. Lance Stroll, DNF on lap 45. I didn't hear what happened to him. I don't think he got any airtime at all on the broadcast. Esteban Ocon, he DNF'd as well. Again, his car just stopped. It wasn't an accident. Valtteri Bottas, I don't know what happened to him. Didn't hear, but he DNF'd. And then Alex Albon, as we talked about, when he had the coming together with Carlos Sainz towards the end on lap 66. So it was a 72-lap race, 4.259-kilometre circuit. Second shortest circuit on the calendar after Monaco, and the last time it's going to be held there in the Netherlands, which is really sad. The Dutch fans are just, oh, look, at every major sporting event, if the Netherlands are represented, they're the fans I want to be around if I can't be around Australians, because they just know how to party. They always have great music. Everyone's dressed in orange. Everyone's always having a great time. And you could just see in the grandstands, people are just dancing in their seats. I felt so sorry for them when Max crashed out, like all those fans there. It was a sprint weekend as well. We haven't even talked about the sprint. So Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda, both in brand new cars this weekend for them. They got one practice, like one free practice, and then straight into sprint qualifying and straight into the sprint race. Sprint qualifying, quickly running through that, George Russell qualified on pole, Lando in second, Charles in third, Oscar in fourth, Kimi in fifth. Not a great qualifying for him. Max in sixth, Lewis in seventh, Pierre Gasly in eighth. And then the results, I mean, I thought the sprint was a bit, it didn't nearly have the action or the vibe of the main race. It was pretty, yeah, I found it a bit dull.
100%. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought the main race was going to be dull as well because no one can overtake, but it was quite entertaining.
No.
But what I got to give shout out to is actually a Norris move when it was Hamilton, Antonelli and Norris. And Norris, like, moved in above Antonelli. Like, it was such a clean, confident move. I was well impressed. So yeah. I mean, as much as I give out about Norris, you can definitely see his confidence has grown, and God forbid it would happen that he might get a second championship, but yeah, there's confidence happening there that I wouldn't have pegged last year or even the year before. It was a good move. It's a very good move.
Yeah, it was. There was loads of overtakes, way more overtakes in the main race than what we were expecting. A couple of good ones in the sprint race as well. George Russell won that, the sprint race. He was very happy. He came into the weekend looking really relaxed, really happy. Like, you know, he was getting congratulations from everyone after getting engaged during the summer break. And he wasn't even miffed at the post-race interviews for the main race when the question about swapping positions with Kimi came up. And he was like, well, Kimi deserved it. He was ahead of me anyway. And, you know, he probably would have passed me eventually. So I think it was the right decision. I was so surprised. He seemed really chilled about it.
Well, I mean, he didn't lose third. I wonder what he would have said if he'd lost third to Hamilton. I think because he got his podium, I'm sure he probably was more chilled about it. No, in fairness, I'm always very harsh on George. He's actually a nice guy. And I think he's fairly, like, as you say, decent. It's an expected response from him, right? I think at the end of the day, I think he's right. Kimi was faster than him this weekend. Kimi took the lead, took second from him at the start and was just quicker than him all weekend. And he's right. Kimi would have taken that second place. He definitely would have. I don't think he would have been able to defend against an equal Mercedes with better tires. If I'm being cynical, and hey, I'm going to be cynical. I think if he'd lost third to Hamilton, he would have been a little bit trickier in his response. Or maybe he would have still been diplomatic and been having words afterwards, you know. I think having Norris showing his head now and showing his pace is good for Russell. Because all he needs is Kimi to DNF in a couple of races.
I don't want that to happen either. Like, if it can't be Ferrari, if it can't be Oscar, let it be an Italian. And I really like Kimi Antonelli. I want my niece to marry him. I just want him in the family. I just, I don't know how I'm going to set that up, but that's my wish. So quickly, just running through the sprint results. George Russell finished on top, so he took the sprint win. Charles Leclerc in Ferrari finished in second. Lando Norris rounded out the podium in third. Kimi Antonelli finished the sprint in fourth. Oscar Piastri in fifth. Max Verstappen finished in sixth. What a terrible weekend for him. Lewis Hamilton in seventh and Pierre Gasly in eighth. So that's the points for the sprint race, which was, pretty dull.
Just want to finish off with Oscar, with my thought on Oscar, is that I've said this before, but I feel like it really worth repeating. Oscar needs to either start thinking like a champion and start demanding stuff, or he needs somebody in his corner. And we talked briefly before, maybe we didn't talk on air about Mark Webber and what role Mark Webber plays in his corner. But like, it is becoming more and more apparent that decisions are made with Oscar during a race, and it's questionable whether they're the right decision. Now, obviously, we don't know the data. We don't know, what has been discussed beforehand. But more and more, it feels like Oscar is the one who's sacrificed for the data, for the strategy, for whatever's going on. That's all fine, but it will be interesting to see, as you say, like, is he resigning himself to being number two in that team? And if he is, who's he got in his corner to help him make sure that that's not happening? I just feel like there's something missing with Oscar, and he's obviously a bit off form as well. And he needs to find his way back,
Could be. I mean, Mark's not there at the races this year, as we talked about in a previous episode. His manager, Mark Webber. So apparently Mark Webber and McLaren had words last year, a bit of a falling out, and Mark was banned, if you like, not welcome into the McLaren garage, hospitality area, et cetera, at races. At the start of the season, they did make an announcement, as in Oscar and Mark made an announcement that Mark wouldn't be attending races, but he would still be Oscar's manager. Maybe that's had an effect. Maybe that's had an effect.
Yeah. So I just would love to see a little bit of Oscar love, That's what I would love from McLaren.
I think everyone on this side of the pond would love to see that as well. So,
Yeah.
Oh, well, we've got a non-race weekend next weekend, and then Bolza. And for the love of God, I really, really, really want a Ferrari driver to win Monza. But I also don't, because I'm not going to be there. And I was planning on being there this year, and I'm not going to be there. And if Ferrari win and I'm not there, a part of me will die and never come back. So when Charles won in 2024, just the sea of Tifosi, to be amongst that would be, I've talked about Dutch fans, but I think the Tifosi in Monza will be next level. We still haven't heard anything about Imola, have we?
No.
The last two races are still, they're still on the calendar, but the situation with the war hasn't changed. So we don't know what's happening yet. We'll just have to stay tuned. Well, guys, I hope you recover from Zandvoort. I'm certainly going to have a nice big long sleep now. It was a hectic race and exhausting, but very exciting and awesome to see so much action on the track. I really enjoyed it. So we would love to hear all your opinions. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Is Kira right? Probably. If you don't agree with her, or even if you do agree with her, we'd love to hear your thoughts. We really like having respectful debate on social media, whether it's on YouTube or Instagram. Give us a like, give us a follow, please subscribe. Hello, if you're watching on YouTube, it really does help this little channel get in front of more people. Thanks very much for listening. Until next week, and until lights out.
Are you ready? And it's lights out, and away we go.
Let's do it. Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.